A very good morning. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to take 10 for Talmud. Kesubas Pei Zayin, Kesubas 87a, pagination is 173. On the topic of Maseches Kesubas, we're going to get practical. How does the woman go ahead and collect her Kesuba? A woman is collecting her Kesuba if either her husband passes away before her, or if the husband divorces her. Now, the process of collecting the ksuba goes through a bit of a metamorphosis through the ages and in halacha and what the woman is expected to do, what she's not expected, how much is the collection on a practical sense, what kind of leverage do we have to make sure the woman is provided for, etc. But we're going to start the topic by seeing how the Mishnah and the Gemara present it. So the Mishnah states, Hapogemes kisubasa, a woman who damages her ksuba. What does it mean to damage her ksuba? It means that the ksuba is a certain amount, whether it's the 100, the 200 based on halacha, or it's more, it's 1,000 based on the generosity or the deal that the husband makes at the time of the marriage, and she damages it. She takes a little bit from that amount. Lusifora ella b'shavua. Once she takes a little bit, she's not going to be able to collect until she makes a shavua, an oath, describing exactly what it is that she took, so that we know what it is that she still is owed. The Mishnah continues at the end of the last small line, Hapogemes ksubasa ketzad. A woman who damages her ksuba, how does this work? And the Mishnah explains, Haisek ksubasa elef zuz, if the amount of the ksuba was 1,000, va'omar lo, and he says to her, the husband says to the ex-wife, His kabalta kesuva seich. You already received your ksuba. V'hi omeres lo is kabalti elamone. And she acknowledges that she received something, but she says, I only received 100. I didn't get my 200 yet. Lo sifora ela b'shavua. She's not going to be able to collect unless she makes a shavua, an oath, to verify how much is truly on the table. Let's turn to Amud Beis. In the fourth line, we see that the Gemara delves into what exactly is the nature of this oath. Sava Rami Bar Chama Lameima Shavua De Oraisa. Rami Bar Chama thought that what's being described over here is a biblical type Shavua called Moda B'Miktzas. The concept of Moda B'Miktzas, partial admission, is that if a person is claimed for 1,000 and he really owes it, he might decide to admit only to a certain amount of it because really he's an honest guy, but he doesn't have the money right now. So he admits to what he's willing to pay right now, and later on, in his mind at least, he's going to admit the rest. And the Torah places upon him an oath because we really want to extract the truth out of him, and we don't like this idea that he's taking the law into his own hands. We want him to go ahead and admit the entire amount, and then we'll work out a payment plan. Now, that's not really us who are imposing it. The Torah imposes this oath called Moda B'Miktzas, partial admission. So Rami Bar Chama thought that that's what's happening over here. She's admitting that she received a certain amount, and therefore she's revising the claim to a different amount. Dikatayin masayim, for example, if someone was claimed for 200, v'kamoda labemeyo, and he admits that he owes 100, havi lehoda b'miktzas atayna, that's an admission in part of the claim, v'chalamoda b'miktzas atayna yishava. And anybody who admits to part of a claim is supposed to make an oath. Amar Rava, Rava said, no way, that's not what's going on over here. Because if it's a biblical oath, then the prototype of a biblical oath is you make an oath and you don't pay. It absolves you. Vehi nishpas vinoteles. And she's making an oath and she's getting. And that's not comparable to the biblical oath. And therefore Rava says this is a rabbinic legislation that she could make an oath. She needs to make an oath because something is bothering us. You'll skip a line to the beginning of the line. Ella Amar Rava. Rava says, I'll tell you explanation over here. It's not Moda B'miktsas that this oath represents, but rather Midrabanon. It's a rabbinic oath. De Para Dayik, because when one pays up, he pays attention. De Mifra Lo Dayik, when one receives the payment, they might not be as attentive to the exact amount that they are entitled to. It's called other people's money. V'ramu rabbanon shivua Allah, and the rabbis required a shivua, an oath upon her, ki hechi detaiduk, so that she should pay attention. Was it 100 that you got, or was it 101? We want to know bidiyuk, exactly how much money she received. So, if she was not pogemis b'ksubasa, she did not damage the amount of her ksuba, our Mishnah is not talking about her, and she's not going to have to make an oath as it is presented here. But if she damaged the amount of the ksuba, then she's going to have to make an oath. Now, the Gemara goes on with a series of questions that are fascinating, trying to dissect how far we're going to take this. For example, Pogemes ksubasa be'edim. If she damages the ksuba, but she has edim, witnesses present when she does it. So do you get the feeling that she would only take in front of witnesses and everything can be verified? She brings in the witnesses, we know exactly how much she took. Or is that not sufficient? Another question. Hapogemis ksubasa pachos pachos mishava pruta. A woman who takes less than a shava pruta, less than the minimal amount of normal value. If, for example, normal value was considered a nickel, she's taking a penny. So, is that, if she has an accounting of that, bidiyuk, exactly, can we say, you know, we weren't talking about her? For example, let's say she likes sugar cubes, and she can tell you that she took one sugar cube on Monday, and she took two sugar cubes on Tuesday, one in the morning, one in the evening, and she's got a tally for everything. So it could be that on a person like that, we simply weren't saying, well, if she takes, then we don't know how much she took. We know good and well she's quite precise about everything that she's doing. Want to add in one more thing. The Gemara ends up on some with the words teiku, that the question should stand. On the Rashi, on the next daf, Peches Amar Aleph, Rashi gives us a little bit of an insight as to the difference between a Shavua de Oraisa and a Shavua de Rabbonon. On the first line of Rashi, on Peches Amar Aleph 88a, Shavua de Oraisa b'shem. An oath that's biblical is going to require either Hashem's name in the oath or a kinoy or something referencing Hashem's name. It's a much more serious oath. Va'ocha sefer biyado, and he holds a sefer Torah in his hands. Aval shvua d'rabbanon, but a rabbinic oath, klala ba'alma, is just a curse. Ke'en shalanu, the way we do it, that we curse someone who's lying, but it's not as direct of an oath the way the biblical oath would be. I'm reminded of a creative solution which a Rav in Europe once used, where the litigant was not cooperating and he didn't seem to be afraid of making an oath. So the rabbi said, I'm going to make you make your oath on the Shnei Luchos Habris, the two tablets, the Ten Commandments. That's how I'm going to make you make your oath. And suddenly the man went white, and he said, I'll tell you whatever you need. Yeah, I don't even have to make an oath. And they were able to get to the bottom of the case. Afterwards, his colleagues asked him from the Beis Din, what made you think of Shnei Luchos Habris, and where were you going to get the Shnei Luchos Habris to have him make an oath? And the rabbi walked to the next room, and he brought out a recently published copy of the Shlah, who was later in his life, after he published the Shnei Luchos Habris, that sefer, he was known as the Shlah HaKadosh, and he said that the sefer recently came out, and he thought to himself, I'll have this guy make an oath on the Shnei Luchos Habris, and that'll set him straight. And he was able to navigate his way through a difficult case. Yasher Koach, thank you for joining.